Internationally known crop circle researchers Ed and Chris Sherwood, more than 30-plus years combined study and experience in the worldwide crop circle formation phenomenon. Ed began crop circle research in 1984 and on-site field work in 1990. Chris began crop circle research in 1991. Ed and Chris co-founded the Millennium Research in 1996. Now, that happens to be a multimedia project created to document and share their combined research concerning crop circles and related phenomena. Here they are, back on Coast to Coast, Ed and Chris Sherwood. Hello, you two. How are you?
Hey,
hello, George.
Hello.
Very good, thank you.
Great. How are you?
Super. Glad to be back.
And did you have a nice Independence weekend, both
of
you?
Yes, we did. Fortunately, we were in a quiet section, relatively quiet section of Santa Monica, so yes, it was nice.
The firecrackers and fireworks weren't all over the place there then, huh?
Not too much.
No, we just heard a couple outside, but we didn't even see any, so we stayed real low.
St. Louis has one of the best firework displays on Independence Day, and had a chance to see it only because I'm not too far from where the arch is. And, I mean, you could just see it for miles, and had a great time. Back to L.A. in another week or so, and off we go. But what's new with both of you?
Well, we have quite a few things new. And, for example, we have recently, myself particularly, posted on YouTube a number of videos, one of which, for example, is of a UFO that I videotaped and we witnessed from our apartment in broad daylight over Santa Monica back in late summer 2006. We had a lot of sightings from our section of town, and a lot of these events occurred interactively to meditations that we were doing at the time. And in fact, to go back a little bit, I was recovering from an illness early that year and decided to go for walks around my neighborhood here and look at the sky, sit down and look and think about times when I did this in England successfully years ago, where I would do a meditation, usually in a remote area, alone or with a small group of friends. And we would send out a mental invitation to any benevolent ET civilization out there, near or far, that might be aware or could be aware of the meditation we were doing. And often I would synchronize the meditation with global meditation, so there were many more people, many more minds participating in a meditation at the same time. And we're talking about an earth healing type meditation. But before we get underway, and in early 2006 I was doing this in the neighborhood, I would send out this mental invitation to any benevolent ET civilizations to participate if they can, near or far, physically or not, and if they can, and grant us a sign that they participated, like a physical sighting that we could see, and even better, if we could record it. So I also would send out not just the mental invitation, or we would do this, but also ask permission to videotape anything that might appear. And I've done this in England in years past, and we've done this together too, and more than 90% of the time, a UFO of one type or another appears, usually right after the meditation, when you open your eyes, and literally within a half a mile to a mile of you, or your small group, there is now a UFO stationary. And it's a very empowering feeling to have a UFO sighting like that when there was nothing there before, or at least to your knowledge, and you do something, you take initiative, and you do a meditation, you bring the energy of your consciousness to something positive that is necessary, like global healing. But you also do that with your conscious awareness that we're not alone, and there may be intelligences out there, near or far, physical, not physical, that may see what you're doing as being very positive and doing it in a way where you are more aware of other realities, like their possible existence, and you're including them. And, you know, I did this in the local neighborhood in early 2006, and to my surprise, because I was right in the heart of a city and it was broad daylight, they started to appear after I would do these short invitations.
Did it astound you, Ed, that they would appear like that? Or did you expect it?
Well, I didn't expect, but because of past experience, there being many times when they would appear, turn up and appear, and be physically visible to people present, I thought, you know, maybe, but to be honest, I'd lived for many years in Santa Monica and seen a few things, but I thought it was such an unlikely place to try this kind of what I call what I understand to be a CE5 or a close encounter of the fifth kind type of sighting, which is very simply is a human initiated UFO and or extraterrestrial encounter.
Okay.
Sighting. But the main thing here is that you take the initiative. You do something that attracts other intelligences to participate in what you're doing. And when they appeared after a few times, I thought, well, maybe I could grab a camera. I asked for permission, but maybe I can grab one and film this. And this happened, and it happened repeatedly in 2006. And after 1 year of doing these meditations and invitations, open mental invitations to any benevolent intelligences, I and Chris and I witnessed 60 UFO sightings.
60?
40 of which I videotaped, all of which were broad daylight, all of which were close range, i.e. No more than a mile distant, most were less than that, half a mile perhaps, or a quarter of a mile. And we're talking about maybe 1,000 to 1,500 feet, again, maximum. So these are relatively close. And, you know, even on several occasions, we would do the meditations more than once in the day. And a meditation that we've been doing fairly a lot, especially in past years and months, is a meditation that's held globally on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. There are so many people meditating at this time that we chose to synchronize our meditation also to this.
Just to tap into that force.
And yes, and when you do this, I think when you show that you understand the positive potential energy effect of our consciousness for global healing, and you do that mindful that there may also be other intelligences out there that we can call on for at least participate with us in consciousness, even if they cannot physically. You know, if they understand that you know, we're a species that is trying to grasp the potentiality of what we are and who we are and do something right on this planet, because we all know what we are doing, what we have been doing, is really pushing it to the brink.
Have you concluded yet, Ed and Chris, where these craft are coming from? In that, you know, within our universe, another universe, other dimensions.
I think that there are many coming and going here, and they're all within our universe, but they're not all within our frequency of perception. And, for example, since July 1992, I have been able to see at will, peer, if you like, into the infrared spectrum. Since I was a small child, I have had a clairvoyant sense whenever there's a UFO nearby, and have frequently all through my life grabbed people and said, I feel something there, or it's going to appear over there, and it does. But years later, when in 1992, I requested God, actually asked the collective mind, if you like, of the universe to allow me to see what I could only otherwise feel up to that point. And almost immediately, I started to see objects which other people around me wouldn't see. But if you had a camera and you pointed it where I said, you would photograph it. And I quickly realized that I had now, because of my past, where I've had a lot of parapsychological experiences in my childhood and teens, I wanted to take this further. So I found myself able to see things at frequencies that your eye, in an ordinary state of consciousness, doesn't see. But if you focus your consciousness on something that may be there but you cannot see, and you succeed to tune out everything else around you, you may find yourself able, after a while, as I did quickly on for myself, find yourself able to see these other objects. So, again, to answer your question, I think there are intelligences and civilizations that have been coming and going here for millennia, some of which interacting with us, some of which maybe not, or not involving themselves with us. There are countless cases of people having close encounters of the third kind, and I have too. And even my own close encounters of the third kind, of which I've had experienced seven in my life, they are all different. And the impression I get from my own experience and then viewing others, the many, many people around the world that say similar things, is that there is definitely more than one kind coming, with more than one intention and motive, and some are definitely very benevolent, very spiritual, very psychic, very technical, but more advanced, clearly, than we are.
What about the others, though, Ed?
The others? Well, it's, I think, a lot like we see on Earth. You can have an advanced technology and not necessarily be very advanced spiritually, very mature emotionally, as a being or a species. And this is, something obviously we need to bring into balance ourselves, and maybe other species have done this at least to the extent of solving their energy crisis. But in my own experience of close encounters of the third kind, I have had a couple of encounters at least which were with a kind that I would say, in being the recipient of the experience, they were negative. They were they offended my free will, and it wasn't pleasant what took place, and I had no control over it. And when you interact with an intelligence that behaves like that, you really do get the sensation that they either don't care, or they're just not capable of understanding your emotions and your feelings.
Well, here on this planet, Ed and Chris, when mm-hmm. something happens, we always say, who benefits? Who profited from this? And then you generally might be able to find out exactly who's doing what, to whom. And if you use that same formula for ET visitations, if they're not benevolent and we question their motives, if we ask that question, what are they benefiting from this visit? It might give us some answers, don't you think?
Sure.
Yes,
oh,
yes,
most definitely.
There's a lot of speculation on what it is they are benefiting from. And
yes, I mean, clearly there is something about us that they find important and significant. I feel that we have to find a way to protect ourselves, if you like, from those that come with selfish intentions and motives.
Right.
And we have to open ourselves more to those that are out there who may be willing to help us in some ways.
Do you find that some people, though, have this incredible fear of ET contact?
Yes.
And maybe that affects their ability to do what you do?
Most definitely. And I did have to go through the process of overcoming my own fear. And it was initially a major stumbling block. I mean,
what were you afraid of?
Well, at first, it's purely, I think, instinctive. I was a nine-year-old child when I had my first face-to-face encounter with an extraterrestrial being, and it was the most terrifying experience of my life. And when the being materialized in my presence, I was paralyzed to the spot immediately, terrified. I mean, I remember not being able to move. I couldn't shout. I remember all my hair standing up on the back of my neck. And as soon as the being had fully materialized, he then said to me in my mind, "Don't be afraid. I'm not going to hurt you." And when I heard those words, all of my fear just evaporated. And then he said to me, "Do you remember?" And when he said those words, I had a flood of mental images pertaining to my life in this lifetime, which just completely transformed my psyche at the time. I mean, I was a child, 9 years old, but there were things that I saw in that super conscious moment about myself, of which afterwards I could not be the same person again. You know, I couldn't walk around as a child playing with the other kids, unaware that we're not alone, unaware that there aren't other beings. And I now knew that for a fact, irrespective, you know, of whether a teacher or a parent said to me, "No, it's impossible," and mocked me. You know, later on, I can cite many people that would say otherwise because they witnessed things with me. But I learned very quickly that fear is, I think, the biggest and most fundamental problem of humanity. And what I had this experience again, very similar, later on in my teens. Again, the same being, a somewhat different situation, but again, the only communication that really took place between us was this being asking me, "Do you remember?" And every time he said that, he triggered an experience within my consciousness that opened my mind to other realities, which perhaps I would not have realized had I not had the experience. But it made me aware of to realize who I am, and to realize things. Well, what I learned in the second time was I saw things pertaining to past life experience, and I came away with a sensation of, or awareness again, that not only are we not alone, there are other intelligences and beings and civilizations out there on many different levels of self-knowledge, like human beings, but also we have many lives.
I want to get more of your take, Ed and Chris, and then we're going to talk about some crop circles, especially the jellyfish formation, which is predicting a devastating solar storm on July 7th. That's fascinating. We'll talk about that as well. Ed and Chris Sherwood, our guests tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Before we get into crop circles, Ed and Chris, are you aware of Project Bluebeam, which is supposed to be this top secret program, which will be a phony alien invasion to bring in the New World Order?
No.
Ed, have you heard about this, or Chris?
No, I haven't.
No,
heard.
Not exactly, although years ago I've heard similar things.
Yeah, this it's one of those internet stories that seems to be emerging all over the place, and we'll just have to monitor it because it's supposed to be happening soon with holograms and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
I heard that some time ago, and in my own intuition feels that there's not much truth to that. So I know some might think otherwise, but I don't feel so.
No, I'm going to have to ask both of you to speak up too, okay?
Okay, sure. Well, I'd like to, before we go off the UFO subject, I'd like to mention that if anyone wants to check our YouTube channel, it's youtube.com/ Circle Scribe, and or you can search Ed and Chris Sherwood, and you'll find several postings that Ed's put up fairly recently. One from a classic talk he gave at a large conference in Cardiff, Wales, that a real great talk he gave on his personal ET encounters. And then there are several clips from some of our Crop Circle talks and, you know, a few pieces. We're also, Ed's working on some new ones to add to YouTube, which we're finding a way to get out some of the material that we haven't been able to get out in books yet, but we still have masses of Crop Circle information that still has yet to see the light of day that we're still working on.
The trouble is we're weighed down by a lot and lot of accumulated research evidence of the UFO / ET contact type and also crop circle type. We have more than 40 combined years of crop circle research, even more of UFO and even more of parapsychological. And we have various books, several books in progress. We're about to revise our website in a big way. And a whole string of YouTube videos in progress, a few up there right now, to give people a little taste of more to come.
Technology has done wonderful things for what you do, what I do, hasn't it?
Yes, it's incredible. Just to think 20 years ago when I was, or 25 years ago when I was first thinking about how I might try to disseminate some of the things I've learned about these phenomena, today, to see the technology that young people have at their disposal is just amazing. And what we have, like you just said, is incredible.
Let's talk a little bit about crop circles. But again, here's one discovered in a field in the United Kingdom, in a barley field. This is, no question, it's a jellyfish. And some people say that it predicts a devastating solar storm that will occur on July 7th. Have you two heard about this one?
Yes, we've certainly heard about it. We think that is completely man-made, by the way, and every single formation in England this year, and every single formation going back to 2001. And if you want to have a sense of what people can do, then look at the crop circle record from 2001 to the present, and you'll get a really good sense. Since the subject became world news in 1990, there have been individuals and groups of people going out into the fields every year, making formations mechanically, and they've never stopped doing this, some people, and there are others that have joined since. And, you know, We feel that if you were to take all of the known crop circle formations, I'm talking about pictograms particularly, and I'm talking about England essentially, because more than 90% of the world's crop circle formations have appeared within 40 miles of Stonehenge in England. So England is like the epicenter. Mm-hmm. And in our view, more than 90% of the crop circle formations that have appeared in England since 1990 have been man-made. Less than 10% have not, and that includes pictograms. And when you take that number, what we feel from our research and evidence, you're looking at several hundred. So you're irrespective of the prolific deceptive human circle making, which has just littered the fields every year.
Yes, and very much confused.
Created so much disinformation.
Disinformation and confusion over the genuine phenomenon, because there definitely is a genuine non-man-made crop circle phenomenon that we have spent our over 40 years combined years of effort researching, documenting. But the great shame of it is that this terrible deception has taken place that has confused, has caused dissension and strife.
Mm-hmm.
Our views are very, you know, unpopular among, you know, certain groups, and you know, yet we still, you know, feel that it's so important to share what we've observed and experienced.
we feel it's very important to discern the truth of the phenomena and to get to the bottom of, first of all, discern, if you can, whether it is a non-man-made formation or a man-made one. And there are all sorts of ways to research that question, and there are all sorts of evidences that have come forward from research from many individuals, including ourselves, over the years, which indicate one from another. Of course, people, deceptive circle makers, who have attended conferences and read all the material they can get their hands on.
They've infiltrated what you guys do,
they've
right?
infiltrated the subject and taken it over.
Completely.
It's very easy to do so. It's not that difficult to mechanically flatten down crop, nor is it difficult to sneak into fields at nighttime when no one is watching and no one knows when you're going to turn up, if at all. And you've practiced it many times. You might have paid the farmer, so you have no fear to worry about of being caught. And, you know, it's a really big shame. And what it has done is that it has made the true communication that has been given in the fields by a non-human source very difficult for people looking in who, say, are not investing a great deal of their lives studying it and trying to get to the bottom of it. But we have felt, actually, since we began crop circle research, that every year from the late 70s to present, and, you know, there's very good ground trace mark, UFO ground trace mark evidence going back many decades, supporting the fact that many, or some, I should say, crop circle events worldwide have been made by an extraterrestrial source, a technological source, landing in vegetation or near it, or coming close to the ground and leaving behind a crop circle or like a crop circle. That is one of the sources. And in fact, you know, I'm often asked, who do you think is creating the phenomenon? And I always say more than one source. Basically three. If you was to just break it right down, we feel that the source is behind most non-man, has been behind most non-man-made crop circle pictogram creation has been a natural, supernatural source, not an extraterrestrial source, a supernatural source that involves energies and forces that include the energy of our consciousness. We, as in humanity and individuals especially that are bringing their attention and the energy of their attention to this subject and phenomena. Many researchers, including ourselves, have had some form of interactive experience with this phenomenon. It's like the source of the phenomena knows what you're doing, what you're thinking, where you are, privately, and can respond. And we've seen this happen many times. We've experienced it many times, and we've seen it happen with other people too. Deceptive circle makers have had forms of experience. One gentleman told me years ago, took me aside and said that he spent many hours designing a formation to make that night in a certain field. He wrote on the paper where he was going to make it, and when he got to the scene, it was already waiting for him. And, you know, that was just one instance. But we have ourselves experienced multiple occasions, and we have a mass of evidence to back this up. In fact, one of the next projects I have lined up for YouTube, people might be interested to know, is a crop circle project, and it will reveal something that has never been revealed before, which clearly demonstrated in 1999, one of those amazing years when there were non-man-made crop circle formations in our view and experience. It demonstrates just how psycho-interactive, how interactive the source of some of these formations, some of the non-man-made ones.
Let's talk a little bit about the deceptiveness in depth here, Ed and Chris. Why do they want to screw up this kind of research? What's their motive behind it?
Well, I
think because they can.
Yes, and I compare it.
We compare. Is it a game?
To computer hackers who create viruses.
It's sure.
It's a mean-spirited sense of power that I believe. I there are a lot of complex reasons, I imagine. But to me, it's a lot like that kind of computer hacking that doesn't have any purpose. It's just mean and destructive. And
except to demonstrate that they can.
Yes.
And this was done back in the early 90s. There was a crop circle experiment done in 1992 where multiple teams of people and individuals were invited to a certain field and asked to make crop formations to a certain design or themes based on themes, variations on a theme of a certain design. And I think the gentleman that won it did it with his bare feet, and it looked pretty good for a man-made formation. But it demonstrated that it's not that difficult when you practice, and especially after all these years, after people like ourselves, researchers have pointed out or disseminated publicly what we have observed in the phenomenon. And of course, there are people out there who they get a kick out of going out and getting away with it once again, doing something which they've said themselves many times. They target the expectations and beliefs of the more outspoken researchers. So, of course, you know, we've had a situation where we've had circle makers in our audience taking down notes. And, of course, we know anything we say could be used out in the fields, and we've
sure.
seen it. But there's a vast difference between that and having a conversation with someone in private where you divulge something, say, about the phenomenon that is maybe not generally known or not even known at all, but you've noticed it, and you point it out, and within hours you get a call that a formation has appeared close to where you're living, and when you see the design, it is completely reflecting in the most incredible way what you were talking about. And at the same time, not just reflecting what you were saying, but also adding some and adding information more than you knew, so that you really are educated when you investigate this formation. And we've had this experience repeatedly. I mean, I'm just thinking back to a formation we actually have at the moment on the front of our website, cropcircleanswers.com.
Right.
On the homepage right there, I've put up a formation. It was the very first crop circle pictogram I deciphered, and it really opened my eyes to just how simple and yet beautiful and genuine the non-man-made phenomenon really is. Because in 1990, I had an experience in a crop circle where an unusual sound was recorded. And I thought about this experience after a week later. I had another experience that again triggered thoughts of sound and crop circles. And I looked into some physics books I had at the time and found a diagram looking identical to how this crop circle was, the design of it. And the diagram is on the front of the homepage, and it shows the sound waves reflected off a vibrating tuning fork. And I looked at the crop circle symbol, and it looked like that was included in its message or in its communication. Interestingly enough, the formation appeared near a field, several fields away from a field where the year before a crop circle had formed, where also a sound had been recorded, and it was analyzed at a university and found to have a frequency of 5.2 kilohertz. And after my sound experience and then finding the diagram in the physics book, I started to look in depth into the physics of sound, and particularly a book that I'd had for many years called The Secret Life of Plants.
Right. Where Clive Baxter's and Christopher Bird, right?
Peter Tompkins and Christopher Bird, yeah.
Okay.
And they did a groundbreaking book where they had a large section on experiments that were done in the 1960s where many different types of plants were exposed to different types of music, different notes, different frequencies in chambers under scientific conditions. And there were biophysical effects and anomalies that were observed in those experiments identical to what researchers, including myself, were seeing in the fields in certain crop circle formations, i.e. plants bent 90 degrees without a break or even a crease, like they were steamed into position. In 96, we had a formation just down the road from where we live here in California. 2 weeks after I moved here, I didn't think I'd see a crop circle formation in 1996 because I didn't have the funds to go back to England that summer. But then 2 weeks later, a pictogram appeared just down the road. And when we got there, we saw a design on a hillside which had no footprints leading into it, was on a steep embankment, seeded with many species of plants, all randomly mixed up. And the energy had gone into that hillside and selected only two plant species from all the random mix, bent them 90 degrees without even a crease. And it, you know, there you had a biophysical effect. Well, in the 1960s experiments, they found that certain music plants, certain plant species will bend towards, others will bend away. Some will remain standing as if they are unaffected by that particular music, where others will die in the same place. And in this crop formation in 1990, the one that, in its design symbolism, included a reference to sound, i.e. a tuning fork vibrating, which was not the message of the formation, but that sound is involved. Sounds have been heard coming out of crop formations. There's a sound known that I've experienced too, called the trilling sound. It's been recorded, it's been analyzed, and it's been found to have a frequency of 5.2 kilohertz. Well, in the 60s, some researchers discovered that wheat best responds to the frequency of 5 kilohertz.
Interesting.
So the trilling sound that researchers, including ourselves, have heard out in the field near some crop formations or in some crop formations is the frequency that wheat best grows at, which is interesting.
It is.
And that's just one little tiny morsel gem that you could learn from the genuine phenomenon.
When we come back after the top of the hour break here, I want to talk with about the crop circle signs that you've deciphered, both of you, more than 150 of them, which is absolutely remarkable, remarkable work. Ed and Chris, you've deciphered 150 non-man-made crop circles. Tell me your method that you used.
Well, one of them is to study the design symbolism of the formations, like you would if you was a graphologist or a cryptographer looking at somebody's handwriting and trying to get your mind around the, or develop a profile, if you like, of the mind of the maker or creator in this sense. So we have always looked for a preponderance of evidence. So we, of course, look for biophysical evidence, whatever is available. The genuine phenomenon has expressed what it is through geometry, mathematics, symbolism, biophysical, in biophysical ways, and in phenomenal events. So, for example, the formation on the homepage of our site right now, a very simple formation of 1990, when I saw the photograph of it, I noticed that in the circle there were many standing, undamaged plants randomly dispersed in that circle. Mm-hmm. And that was another little indication, a biophysical indication, supporting that formation being non-man-made. Myself initially started to read what we say is to read the communication of the non-man-made primary source of the phenomenon. You know, we feel that there are those that have been made by an extraterrestrial source, but They're mostly not pictograms. Of course, there are the many man-made ones, but if you could make them all disappear, and you'd just be left with the natural, supernaturally made, created formations, there are many pictograms. And in 1990, there was a massive formation which the rock group Led Zeppelin put on the album cover of their album at the time. Great big formation with like key-like features coming off it. And myself, like thousands of people in Great Britain, when this formation appeared, you know, was just suddenly drawn to the subject in a very, very big way, and enticed by the formation to try to work out what it means. Because in that formation, there were plants bent 90 degrees without a break or a crease when it was first found. There were camera crews from different countries went into the formation, and when they stood inside any part of it, the equipment wouldn't work. But if they stood just outside one of the circles or one of the features, everything would come back on again. So, again, there were some indications. So in 1990, I looked at this and I thought, well, this doesn't look like a UFO landing mark. This looks like a communication, and we better work out what it's saying. And what I discovered after researching various sources, symbol book sources, I found that the formation was constructed almost entirely of international meteorological symbols put in such a way that the formation accurately described the weather conditions 12 hours before and 12 hours after that formation appeared. Back in 1990 and before, there was a meteorologist by the name of Professor Terence Meaden, who was saying at the time, he was one of the main known researchers at the time, saying that in his view, genuine crop circles are being created by certain weather conditions. Huh. Now,
and others have said, as a matter of fact, just had a guest who believes that the planet's alive, the Gaia theory, mm-hmm. and that it's trying to communicate with us.
Right. Well, certainly the planet has a collective consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and the highest form of its collective consciousness is the human species part of its collective consciousness, you know, the thinking part of it. And not to say that, you know, we're all highly evolved in that within that section of its consciousness, but as a total consciousness, that's quite a force, and yes, is capable of things. But we have found evidence over and over again when asking the unseen source of the genuine phenomenon, you know, who and what are you? Repeatedly, we've seen in the fields put down in the form of formations since the late 70s all the way up to 2001. That question has been answered over and over and over again. And every year, the primary source has given the answer and given it often in a new way, but again saying basically the same thing, that it is universal, it is infinite, it is collective. It is divine, and we are connected to it. And it is highly psycho-interactive.
And frequently, a lot of the symbols that have appeared are symbols that describe forces that are the natural forces behind the phenomenon.
Involved in their creation.
Involved in their creation, such mm-hmm. as sound and...
meteorology.
Meteorology, yes.
I mean, so people have asked me over the years, well, why state a meteorological message in a formation, in a genuine formation, and what's so significant about giving us a weather forecast? Well, actually, it was the most that we understood at the time about the physics of, or part of the physics of what's involved in their creation. These events don't occur under just any condition. There are certain natural conditions, both to do with the weather, to do with their location, the presence of water, the position of the moon, solar activity. I noticed in 1990, when I was trying to get to the bottom of the cause of genuine crop circle events, mm-hmm. I've been studying since 84 and every year and intensively, I found that there were so many things involved in the creation of a genuine event. It was more like a modern-day miracle than it was you know, something supernatural than something made by extraterrestrials, because there were all these forces and physical elements involved in their creation. And then there was this X factor, which seemed to be human consciousness. You know, a researcher would say something like, for example, Colin Andrews, well-known name in crop circle research, asked in the field in 1997, when perplexed at the formations he was looking at, God, if you could, he asked God, if you could only give me a clue as to how these are created. And within seconds, a sound began in the wheat field in front of him, about 3 meters away, and it got louder and louder, and he became unnerved, and he was about to want to leave the field in a hurry when it suddenly stopped. But I felt when I first heard that in 1990 that there was a clue. He'd asked for a clue, and he'd been given one. And interestingly, he hadn't asked for Gaia to give him a clue, or spirits, or ET. He had asked for God. And I've done the same thing in other circumstances, and had some pretty incredible interactive phenomenal occurrences, including the materialization of crop formations. And repeated themes in the genuine phenomenon since the early 80s has been, one of the repeated themes has been the answer to the question of who and what is behind it.
Right.
And in 1990, when I looked at this big meteorological message in the fields, I could see that the symbol elements were not exactly the same as meteorological symbols. They were slightly different. And I suspect that it was because there was more than one message being communicated in this formation. And that is typical of many genuine formations of the past. That is, that they have mutually cross-referencing information. For example, this one was made up of mythological symbols, but it was also making a reference to dragons and dragon lore, if you like. For example, the mythological symbols, one of the mythological symbols was a wind direction and the strength symbol, known as a wind feather in meteorology, looked like a key. And the meteorological wind feather in the crop circle had been adjusted so it also looked like the claw of a foot. And there were three of these, so it looked like a dragon, a symbolic dragon, putting its 3 feet down on the land. And I say a dragon because the central axis of this formation was right bang on a major ley line. And in China, ley lines, or these earth energy lines that crisscross the earth, we call them ley lines in England. Mm-hmm. In China, they're called Lung Mei, and that's translated dragon paths. And if you were to follow the axis of this formation just 2 miles, it struck a road sign name called Dragon Lane. So there were these clues in the landscape in relation to the placing of the formation and in its design symbolism, which alluded to dragons. Well, it also appeared in a field called East Field, and I thought, you know, this wasn't for nothing either. There's something being expressed here. So I just looked into Eastern traditions, and I discovered that in the Orient, for thousands of years, they have revered 9 sacred dragons, and these dragons ruled the weather. So these dragons, or this tradition of a dragon tradition in the Orient, where dragons were mostly seen as benevolent, not malevolent, like in the West, associated with lines of energy of the earth, and also appearances in the sky. You know, we have fire breathing dragon legends worldwide,
yeah.
And yet we have also fireballs worldwide, which, you know, are commonly reported as a luminous UFO. One of the 2 types of UFOs that I've seen throughout my life, one of them is a ball plasma, which can come in many shapes, many sizes and colors, but looks like a fireball. And the most frequent color that I've seen these in are in amber orange, and they look like fiery little suns, or, you know, little. They can be up to 100 feet in diameter. But I've witnessed more than 100 of these, and videotaped some of them, in the areas where these formations have appeared. And even on one occasion, observed one go down into a wheat field. And when I got to the location soon afterwards, there was a brand new non-man-made crop circle formation. So in this formation in 1990, this meteorological message, this giant pictogram which grabbed everyone's attention in 1990 and drew them into the subject, made international news, found its way on Led Zeppelin's album cover. It was a meteorological message that gave us clues to the physics of the creation of this formation and those coming from this source. And it was in decoding that and realizing, well, if this was ET, why reference dragons? Dragons in the Orient are considered natural and cosmic energies and forces. They rule the weather. Thus, the mutual reference to dragon and mythological symbols in the formation. But it seems to point more towards a natural intelligence or a supernatural intelligence. And I just followed that thread, and I kept following it. And I felt that in deciphering this formation, this is what basically happened was, it was, for me, like a Rosetta Stone.
Yeah.
The gentleman, Jean-François Champignon, who deciphered the Rosetta Stone, you know, once he did that, back in, 1808, you know, he was the world's expert in reading hieroglyphics. So if you gave him a phony hieroglyphic, if you gave him a hieroglyphic that you made up, say a mixture of other real hieroglyphics, he would most likely see and be able to tell you that, this one's not a genuine hieroglyphic. It doesn't communicate like all the other hieroglyphics. It may be man-made. This is what's happened with us. I started deciphering in 1990. I noticed how the primary source, the supernatural source, was communicating, how it was reflecting our consciousness, and also adding things that were not in our conscious mind at the time, and no one's mind really at the time, unless it was someone who was doing something in private, and you know, it would come out later. But it far exceeded the awareness of the people at the time.
Why does it use crop formations for communication? Are there other ways they could have done it, or it could do it?
Certainly. I feel that one of the essential things humanity needs to know is that we live in a psychokinetic universe. We live in a universe of consciousness, not just a universe of energy and matter, but a universe of consciousness. And that everything is affecting everything else by the energy of its consciousness, some things more than others, especially self-aware, thinking, intelligent beings. You know, we affect, I think, our own and each other's reality from moment to moment by the energy of our thoughts, our emotions, our intentions, and our attention. You know, whatever we give our attention to for any length of time, we are transmitting energy to that thing. Psychokinetic energy. And one of the things that we've seen in this phenomenon reflected over and over again is how it seems that the energy of our consciousness is co-creative. I mean, it can be co-destructive too, but just talking about the co-creative nature of it, I took part in a meditation, for example, on a hill in 92 with eight other people, so there were nine of us. It was a spontaneous meditation. It was organized by Stephen Greer at the time.
Sure, absolutely.
And we're in England on a hill, dead of night, late, maybe midnight-ish. And it was a spontaneous experiment. He said, let's think of a crop circle design that the genuine sources, he was thinking more extraterrestrial. I wasn't at the time, but it didn't matter because it was an experiment. He said, let's think of a design each and then visualize that. So we sat quietly for 2 minutes. He asked each one of us in turn what we thought. Interestingly, seven out of nine of us all thought the same thing, which to me told me at the time that at least seven out of nine of us are experiencing group consciousness here, collective consciousness, a state of one mind. know, you only need one person to have that thought. If the others are on a similar frequency, they can also receive it.
Do you get a lot of reports of orbs being seen in the area of crop formations?
Oh, yes, definitely. And that's also a whole other subject, because in 1992, when I started to witness UFOs, well, I say UFOs, extraterrestrial objects in the infrared range, frequency range, I also started to see balls of light that other people around me would tend not to see. And these could be really large. I mean, yeah, these could be many feet in diameter and brilliant. And, you know, sometimes I'd look around me and be absolutely amused that nobody else saw it. But they were occurring on a different frequency, and in ordinary state of consciousness, you cannot see them. But I noticed quickly that because I was in the landscape to try to interact with the genuine source of the phenomenon, I was with other people at the time, including Stephen Greer and others, other known people in the subject. I noticed that these balls of brilliant white light would increase in number at a certain location just before another luminosity would appear, but this one everybody would see and would look like an orange fireball, would look like a ball plasma or a metaphorical dragon, if you like. And I witnessed this happen more than 100 times. And on one occasion, I saw the process go from being balls of light, brilliant, luminous, individual balls of light suddenly multiplying rapidly to you can't count them, and then suddenly they disappeared to be replaced with a big orange fireball that everyone could see, which then descended into a wheat field and left behind an amazing formation.
We're going to be back in just a moment, because crop circles just don't occur on crops. Believe it or not, they happen in the sea. We'll talk about that next on Coast to Coast AM. Ed and Chris, tell us about crop circles of the sea, another phenomenon.
Yes, and I'll tell you about this one because, in fact, in the last 2 years, I've written two new articles about this astonishing phenomenon that most people have never heard of, called marine light whales. And this is a phenomenon that I'd heard about. Ed and I both had been aware of it years ago, and I actually wrote an article in 1997 about marine light whales. And that article's been out there, published and on the internet. And because of that, in the last 2 years, I've had two of the most amazing reports of marine light whale sightings come to me from crews aboard Navy ships in the Straits of Hormuz and in the Arabian Gulf.
What did they describe?
Oh, my God. I can't keep my thoughts trying to even sound coherent about this. Let me back up a little bit. What they described, and maybe I should give the readers a little bit, or the listeners, sorry, a little bit of background. Marine light whales have been rumored for years, centuries, by sailors. These light displays that apparently happen in the ocean, spinning wheels, imploding and exploding concentric rings, swirling spirals, and science hasn't even authenticated this phenomenon yet so far, but there are lots of accounts. And because of the internet, because of maybe a lot more sea traffic, and especially probably because of the Navy deployment in the area where a lot of them have been seen, two different Navy ships, a total of 80 military Navy crew members have witnessed this phenomenon, and I've written articles that are on our website and have been published in various places. The latest sighting was on Easter Sunday this year in April, and a crew aboard the USS Milius, which is a Navy ship that was deployed in the Arabian Gulf, they witnessed a 40-minute long display of 50 of the crew members witnessed this 40-minute display of marine light whales, which comprised of it's glowing bars, spirals, circles, and wheels that they describe it looking like an underwater disco show. They said it was incredible, all the descriptions I got from the men who witnessed it. And, of course, I've never seen it myself, but I've read a lot of descriptions. It's a geometric energy system that creates this fantastic light show of changing shapes, and it occurs in waters that are rich in bioluminescent plankton. And it is my firm conviction that this is an electromagnetic discharge that is happening between the magnetosphere, the Earth's electromagnetic field, and the ground, and it would otherwise be invisible if it weren't happening in the sea where this bioluminescent plankton is present. And I also think that it's excellent evidence and corroborating evidence of the physics that is, I believe, connected to genuine crop circles as well, because the configurations, sets of bars, even straight line bars that converge on each other, creating diamond shapes in the ocean, that have been witnessed by such highly credible military witnesses. The commander of a ship is one of the men who sent this amazing description in the most recent sighting that happened. I mean, you couldn't have more credible witnesses to witness this phenomenon. And it, I wish that, you know, I could see it myself or have some kind of a 3D animation done of it to just be able to enjoy what it must look like. But they describe it going as far as the eye can see. It stretches to the horizon when these shapes are pulsating and spinning, and they don't get affected by the ship, apparently. It seems to have nothing to do with the presence of the ship, but I don't know.
It's very strange, isn't it?
Very, very strange.
And also because it's occurring in the ocean, there is no evidence after the fact.
It dissipates, I guess, right?
Yes. Whatever's agitating the bioluminescence, it ebbs and flows, and when it ebbs, that's it. End of light display.
But there is great evidence that, at least in some of the accounts that I've been able to research, that it has to do with solar activity and geomagnetic activity. The sighting in 2007 that was in the Straits of Hormuz, another Navy ship, it happened on a weekend when there had been a lot of solar activity, and the magnetic fields of Earth were so disturbed that thousands of racing pigeons were lost, because it happened to be in South Africa and Europe. There were racing pigeon trials going on, and it must have been for some, I don't know, seasonal event, but I found a report that corroborated on that weekend all these pigeons had been lost because the magnetic fields had been so messed up by the solar activity that had been happening. And that was something I could connect to possibly being part of what stimulates this marine light wheel event to
And crop circles, certain crop circle events,
certainly,
too.
Certainly, we've contended that for a long time, that solar activity is connected to crop circle activity, to ball plasma activity, and other phenomenal activities.
Certainly to the crop circle formations that have been created by a natural, supernatural source.
Ed, how long do you think this has been going on? Since the beginning of time, of mankind?
I think probably the ebb and flow of natural energies and forces, yes, has been going on since the birth of our solar system. But what I think brings another interfering element to that is when you bring human consciousness or human awareness to the phenomena, is that you then can affect it, and that effect can become visible and very noticeable. Again, I feel that we've deciphered many what we see from the preponderance of evidence and from our experience were non-man-made formations among the many others that weren't. Sorry, I've lost my thread. What was I going to say? There have been many messages in these formations, like, for example, the one I said was a meteorological message, mm-hmm. and an indication to the source being a natural one, natural supernatural, i.e. in the form of dragons. You know, you have to research the elements of the communication. But despite there being many messages, there's really been one in my view. And that message has been that we co-create psychokinetically this phenomenon. We're not the creators of it. You know, you can't sit on the hill and will it to occur.
Right.
But what I didn't finish to say earlier when I said that I did do a spontaneous meditation on a hill with eight other people in 92, and this is just one of many examples I could cite. Stephen Greer asked us to visualize something. We all sat in silence for 2 minutes. We all, 7 out of 9 of us, thought the same thing, which was 3 circles in an equilateral triangle connected by straight pathways. We then visualized that for 20 minutes. We sent it out into the cosmos. We didn't know if it would appear. We didn't will it to occur. But a few hours later, a few miles away, for the first time ever, there it was in a wheat field. And it was a beautiful formation, non-man-made, with plants bent 90 degrees without a break or a crease, among other things. And it showed how I feel that the human consciousness element to the phenomenon is a key component to the creative process. And it's we've found, for example, the interactions that we've experienced, and we've said this many times in talks and other venues and things, that the interactions that we've experienced, which you can read about on our website, cropcircleanswers.com, on our articles pages especially. If you go to the articles section and you go through some of the articles, you'll find a lot more of what we're saying in them. But the fact that if you observe something correct about this phenomenon, and I'm really speaking more in terms of the past, like, for example, the meteorologist, he said that, in his view, weather was creating the phenomenon. Well, weather can't create these pictographic formations.
Right.
But weather does.
Not without intelligence behind it.
Exactly. There has to be some intelligent guiding force that is at least utilizing these natural energies and conditions so that, for example, certain solar activity, lunar positions and weather and land topography and presence of water and all these factors are there. But throughout the years, the question that many have asked, including ourselves, not just who has been creating this phenomenon, but how and what. And what we quickly found was that you had to get into physics. You had to consider the possible physics of their creation. And one of the first things I discovered was sound, was just how much sound is an ultrasound, and the physics of these two things are involved in their creation and reflected in the formation's design, symbolism, and in their geometry and mathematics and other phenomenal things like the trilling sound. So it's, in a way, it's like an overall guiding intelligence has been totally aware of what all researchers have been thinking and groping towards in an understanding of what's really been occurring. And when a researcher, even in his quiet corner, not communicating it to hardly anybody else, finds something true about the phenomenon, it is almost instantly reflected in the next series of genuine formations. And so that's also why, by the way, we've called our website cropcircleanswers.com. It's not to say that we have all the answers. We do certainly feel like we have some answers because of our many years of experience and research. But we primarily call our website cropcircleanswers.com because we see the non-man-made formations themselves, the pictograms, that we feel are not made by an ET source, but made by a supernatural source, one in which interacts with, is connected to, but independent from, our consciousness, something which is more of a collective consciousness, which we are part of, and not just the collective consciousness of planet Earth, Gaia, but really universal consciousness. And I think it's one of those things that humanity needs to awaken to in its own needed growth. And soul and mind development is not only that we're not alone, but also that we exist in a psychokinetic universe which is infinite. And, you know, in our the limits of our senses, we can't get our minds around that except to understand that there is, there's no perceptible limit to consciousness. And consciousness is not a thing. You know, it's not physical. It's a state. And consciousness comes in basically four different forms. There's the unconscious, the subconscious, the conscious, and the superconscious. And those four different states, each and every one of us on planet Earth, and I suspect every other self-aware, intelligent being in the universe has. You know, we all have a part of our consciousness that we don't access, mm-hmm. Things that we forget, that fall into. Then we have a part of our conscious awareness, the energy of our awareness that is, we're partially aware of things in our subconscious. Then there are the things that we are aware in this very moment. And then there are things that we can become aware of when we focus our, when we give our complete undivided attention to something. And that's when we start to have superconscious experiences and perceive things in a supersensory way and have parapsychological experiences. Well, every one of us is a collective consciousness within ourselves, and we're also a collective consciousness together as a species. And when you think of just how much psychokinetic energy 6 billion plus people are kicking out from moment to moment in the form of the energy of thought, the energy of emotion, the energy of their intentions to do things, and their energy of attention. That is a tremendous psychokinetic energy, especially over time. And it's something for us as a species, I think, to realize about ourselves is that we are co-creators of the physical world universe around us. We might not see all the time how we affect it, but we've all experienced synchronicity. We've all had these experiences of wow, you know, how can you be thinking something or just say something on the next moment someone on the television says exactly the same thing.
Sure. Are these messages, Ed, though, leading up to something huge, something grand?
They did. I would say rather than they are, they did. They affirmed in the last decade of the previous millennium that we are living in transitional times. We are living in the prophesized end times, but that does not mean necessarily destruction and the end of the world. In fact, what apocalypse means is revelation, is revealing and unveiling. And these are, in my view, again, if you could make disappear from the map all of the man-made formations, all of the disinformation that has appeared on the landscape since 1990, and just see the genuine communication, you would see that it's saying, it's affirming psycho-spiritual things that we need to know for, I think, humanity to evolve. And it's done this in a very gentle, nudging way, and a peaceful, non-threatening way in this form. And it's given us messages in the form of pictograms for us to think about. There are things there that we will understand, can recognize, if we investigate it and put the pieces together. It really is a jigsaw puzzle. And it's, you know, it's important to remember that at all times, really, that there is more than one source. There has always been more than one source of the phenomenon, and most of them are man-made. Because since the...
But all we need is one that isn't.
Exactly.
And we've had hundreds. We've had several
and
hundreds
had,
of them.
Exactly.
And honestly, it's one of our tasks of life to, one of our big life projects is to finish one of the books we have in progress, which has the ones that we feel confident were non-man-made and supply the great evidence for them, indicating that, and to show what they communicated, how... all of our questions were about the phenomenon were basically answered. When I say our questions, ours and other people's, and how much, in a way, in this transitional time that we've been living in and we are still living in, time of great earth changes, time of tribulation that we have brought on ourselves as a species, as well as natural cycles that are going on that could make things difficult too. And, you know, the denial of the existence of God, or what you might call God, something which is universal, divine, infinite, source of all life, that's still a problem on planet Earth. There's still a lot of people that don't feel that that's a reality. And I feel that one of the reasons for the phenomenon is to awaken people's consciousness to this, to there being a psychokinetic universe that we are all part of, that we affect, and can also experience a form of interaction back from. You know, we're all particles in this creation, this great creation, and you can just keep expanding on the theme of collective consciousness. You know, you can take your own consciousness and see unconscious, subconscious, conscious, and superconscious. Then you can look at your species and look at the collective of that. But if you keep expanding it, it really is, I think, infinite. And that has been one of the big answers that has been given to us over and over in the field.
Fascinating. Okay, next hour we'll take questions with both of you, Ed and Chris Sherwood. Their website, CropCircleAnswers.com. I'm George Norrie. You're next with them on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Ed and Chris Sherwood with us. Your calls as well. Ed and Chris, back to UFOs for a moment before we go to the calls. What would close encounters of the sixth kind be? We already know now what five would be. What do you think?
Yeah, it's funny you should ask. I've often had my own little categorization after five, and that is you basically kind of go back to one, because you could have initiate a sighting, but what you experience could be a close encounter of the first kind, or it could be a close encounter of the second kind, or the third kind, or it could be, you know, if third kind is to witness one or more being, fourth kind, in my definition, has always been to have more than one third kind experience. It could be positive, it could be negative. But the fourth kind of encounters is really continued or multiple third kind encounters. So when you get to fifth kind, and, for example, you go to a location where there's no UFO sightings occurring, and you sit on a hill quietly or somewhere discreet, alone or with a small group of people, respectfully doing this in a psycho-spiritual way, you send out your mental invitation, and you do your earth healing meditation, and then you have a sighting. Well, you know, you could have a sighting where an object just appears and is there for a short period of time and disappears or leaves. You could have a close encounter of the first kind. You could do that and have a camera nearby, and because you ask for permission first, when you go to reach for that camera, the object doesn't just disappear or zip away and film something. So then you had a close encounter of the second kind. All of these different types of encounter also are, in my experience, you go through it in a process kind of way, unless you are unfortunate enough to cross the paths of beings that are indifferent and don't care of how you experience thing. But those that are more advanced psychospiritually and do care, they interaction with them is very much a process. And although there may be moments where you feel fear, if you examine that, as I did in my life, in the instances where I felt great fear at having a being just feet from me, after the event, I realized that I really didn't have any reason to be afraid. It was imagined. It was an instinctual reaction because of the unfamiliarity of it, the suddenness of it, and the strangeness of it. But really, I imagined the worst. You know, I reacted as you do when you're afraid. And when I learned to overcome my fear, and on YouTube, if people go to youtube.com/circlescribe, and that's one word, not two words, you'll find a series of videos that I posted up there, 1 to 8, from a talk I gave 14 years ago, where I outline how I learned to overcome my fear in the contact experience, because it really does condition and inhibit just how far you can go with contact. Obviously, once you overcome your fear or you learn to be fearless, you learn to not just believe in what your fearful thinking is telling you, but you observe it, you question it. Then you can have much more interactive experiences. But, you know, it all depends on, I guess, the purpose behind the interaction. With myself, I have experienced close encounters of the third kind 7 times. 4 of those occasions were with the same being. And if I add up the from those 4 occasions, just how much the being said to me, it was very, very little. But what it did say, it never said anything about itself, never told me its name, where it comes from, how it lives. All it asked me each time was, do you remember, look at yourself, understand who you are, not just as a human being, but as a conscious energy life form. Understand you have a soul, as does everybody, as does every self-aware thinking intelligent life form, including extraterrestrial life forms, self-aware thinking beings. And I think that's the great equalizer in a way, because irrespective of where they come from, why they're here, how much technology they have, how much psychic abilities they have, at the end of the day, they are born as we are of this creation, I feel, in my view. We are sparks and particles of this psychokinetic, physical, non-physical universe.
I got to tell you, Ed, you bring a very different, refreshing dimension to this. You both do. Let's go to the calls. East of the Rockies, Ashland, Kentucky, we go. Aaron, you'll be the first. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good. All is well.
Hi, Aaron.
How you doing? Hi to your guest there, too. I had a question. You were talking earlier there that you had some reincarnation experiences, kind of like shown to you again there. I just kind of wonder if you can go into just a little bit more detail, maybe who you were or something like that. That'd be kind of interesting to hear maybe who you were, you know, back in past lives. You know what I mean?
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate the question. The first encounter I had, the being showed me things at the age of 9 that pertained strictly to this lifetime. And I saw things that were future events in this lifetime, which as a 9-year-old child, I did have difficulty understanding. Like the fact that I would meet and marry a blonde American woman from the West Coast. When I was 9 years old, if you said to me, you're going to meet and marry a blonde American from the West Coast, I'd have a hard time understanding all of that. But I would get the gist of it. And honestly, when I learned that from my experience, I rejected it for many years. And I didn't want that to be so, because, you know, when you see things that are supposed to be events or facts ahead of you, you start wondering just how much free will you have. But really, it's just a case of you peered into a little piece. You put a spotlight on, or a spotlight was triggered for you to see. And so in the first encounter, when the being said, do you remember, I saw things to do with my life. And as I've lived this life, it hasn't all been shown to me. There are things I don't know happening all the time, going to happen. But there are other things that I did see. And some of those things I have, stayed with me vividly. Other things are triggered when I experience them. It's strange. It's like little things in the environment can just trigger a memory and, you know, it can take me right back. But in the second encounter I had, where I met the same being, this time I actually was on board the object that this being came in to my parents' house. It was an onboarding counter. And he asked me again. He took me to a room and lit all around. And there was like a passageway into a little, like kind of a hall between two rooms. And there was an inset, what looked like a bed kind of inset on the floor in the wall. And he pointed down to that and he said, "Do you remember?" And when he said that, I had the same thing, all the flood of mental images, except they did not pertain to my life in this life. They pertained to other lives that I've lived as a human being, and they also included a life that I've lived as an extraterrestrial being. Now, when I say I saw that, I didn't see every detail. I didn't see every fact or every piece of information. But I saw what I did see to do with the extraterrestrial life, which for many years I couldn't talk about. I couldn't even mention it to anyone without crying because it was just too emotional, too upsetting to me. It was because when the being said, "Do you remember?" and I had this remembering, I saw myself dying on this bed, if you call it that, and that this being who was with me knew me, and I'd known him. And that the memory I had was that I was dying and that I would soon be leaving my body and that this would be the last time that I would be with this being in physical form and I would be moving on as a soul. And that was very upsetting to me. And strangely enough, when I had that confronted in this experience to me, it you know, for years and years, I couldn't talk about it and I wouldn't talk about it. I mention it in the series of YouTube, the 1 to 8 parts, I go into quite a lot of my early encounter experiences and things I learned from them. But I don't really want to say who I was as a name, because I feel that we've all lived past lives, every one of us, and that it's a function of consciousness that we forget. We need to. We need to forget the details of all of our previous soul life tracks, because if we didn't forget them, we wouldn't be able to function as finite beings in this body, in this time. You know, you'd have a hard time making sense of things. But there are laws and forces of consciousness and things that you can access in a superconscious way. And when there's a need, when there's a necessity to know something, you know, you might be questioning who you are. You might be wondering, or there might be things happening around you, external from you, like synchronous, meaningful synchronous things that keep saying certain things for you to look at or look into. And I feel that we have all lived multiple lives, but we have forgotten most of those, what those lives were. That we might remember fragments of those lives if it's necessary. We might get a hint or a feeling. We might have more than that. But the to know that is important in knowing that we are energy beings, and it's the energy of our consciousness that really survives physical death. And physical death is not an end to our consciousness. Just like sleep at nighttime, when we fall asleep, we become unconscious to the world around us, physical world around us. It's like we die every night. And what happens? Our consciousness doesn't die. It continues. Even our thinking continues. You know, we go through that state, that moment where you can't quite stay awake. You fall asleep, and that there's a little moment where it's very difficult to observe exactly what happens with those thoughts while you're thinking. But I spent a long time as a teen trying to catch this moment and observe what happened, and eventually I did, and noticed how when we think as we're sleeping, it's not uncommon for our thoughts to become our dream, and our dream to become three-dimensional, and our dream to become so real to us because we're giving all our attention to it that it is really not much different from the physical waking world that we are in ordinarily, otherwise. And what was I going to say?
Okay, while you're pondering, let's take another call, okay?
Sure, sorry.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Let's go to California. Jeremy, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jeremy.
How are you doing, Mr. Murray? It's a good, pleasure Jeremy. To talk to you. I listen to you every night.
Hello,
Jeremy. Hi, Jeremy.
The well, thing I wanted to say was I wanted to talk about Area 51. I don't know if that's out of topic or not. But
well, we'll find out. Any of you have any exposure to that, Ed, Chris?
Not directly, no.
Well, we're definitely familiar. Aware.
We're familiar, obviously.
Sure.
With as much as we as probably
something's out. Going on over there.
Definitely.
That
we've,
and
we've
many
been
other
told.
Places. I think many other places, too, most surely.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to throw in just the fact that before I moved here 14 years ago, I lived in the heart of crop circle country and in the place where many formations and many UFO sightings have occurred, both of the extraterrestrial type and the ball plasma type. You typically see the military response very quickly, usually within minutes. And, you know, I've observed more than 100 objects in one valley alone of the two different types of UFO that I've mentioned, plasma and extraterrestrial technology, and on many occasions seen multiple helicopters just heading straight for them as soon as they materialize or appear in the landscape. So, you know, the military intelligence community is, a branch of it at least, is fully aware of these phenomena, has at least a unit, probably every country has, that responds to these things, not all, but certainly when they're in or near sensitive areas, and they monitor it. And I think overall they probably they may know things more than some things more than most of us because they have hardware or they have, again, you know, vaults of camera footage and, mm-hmm. and things that you just never see. But at the same time, I still think, though, the military scratching their heads at times and just as wondering as many other people, civilian people, are wondering as to, you know, where they come from, why they're here, et cetera.
All right, let's go to Colorado. Joe, first-time caller. Go ahead, Joe.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I wanted to ask your guests. Well, going back a little bit in the show, when you were talking about the hoaxsters,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a friend of Simeon Hine and Jay Widener and Paula Harris and everything, and I interviewed Simeon on my show the other day, and we talked about the hoaxsters, the so-called hoaxsters, right? Mm-hmm. And he says that, you know, he says he knows a lot of them. He's been researching it for 15 or more years now. He says he knows a lot of them, and they're not hoaxsters. They don't have ill intentions. They're like, a lot of them are like parts of druidic groups, you know, and different spiritual groups. They feel that the crop circles like mandalas, you know, have positive effects on human consciousness. And Ron Russell was saying the same thing. And it actually helps the crops. It has all kinds of anomalous effects that they felt were beneficial. And that these people were actually, you know, trying to do it as a service, really, to humanity.
I think some probably think they're doing the right thing, Ed.
Well, they're not doing a service when they're doing it deceptively.
And when they're vandalizing the farmer's field without permission,
yeah,
committing crimes.
And then others, of course, are just doing it as frauds, no
well,
doubt.
You know, for a long time, in the early years, and that's what many of these people were saying openly to people like myself and others who were doing the research, was that they were trying to test the ability of so-called researchers to discern non-man-made from man-made.
Mm-hmm.
Some, yes, were pranking, but the majority had a bit more interest in going out and challenging people to really tell the difference. And they weren't calling themselves land artists back then, and they weren't trying to associate themselves as such. But as years have gone on, we've noticed almost every single researcher we have known at some point, I mean, we too have had moments ourselves where you're confronted with a formation that you cannot tell just by looking at it, or even maybe from a little bit of information, other information that comes forward, you can't tell whether it's man-made or not. So what we do is we put it in an unknown box until there's more information to indicate whether it's one or the other. it's really important to discern, because yes, you can make formations mechanically. You can do sacred geometry, and because of it, using a creating a sacred shape, you are also generating an energy form. You can do this in a landscape where the feng shui is enhanced and put it on a ley line crossing point and amplify energy at that place, or the energy will be amplified naturally at times at that place, and do a meditation and have that amplified. But the trouble is...
I'll let you finish up right there when we come back. Ed, I'll let you wrap up on the comments you were making about hoaxers, and then we'll go on to final calls. Go ahead.
Sure. We call them deceptive human circle makers because most of what they do has some form of deception in it, from making formations illegally in farmers' fields, or going out and making formations that maybe they paid the farmer to make, but they didn't make it clear to other people coming in to see their works that these were man-made formations. So they perpetuate a mystery around their creation by the fact that a lot of what they do is done illegally and that they cannot come forward and say so. They have said, as an excuse in many occasions, that that's because they want to, they're artists and they don't want to sign their work. Well, what they've done for the most part has been done illegally, so that's why they don't want to sign their work. But also, if it was done honestly, if a group of people went out and made a formation that had sacred geometry in it, they wanted to do a psycho-spiritual activity, and it was done respectful to the farmer.
Which people do on occasion, we must say.
Sure.
Your caller had a point there, but not that often.
Yes, most are not done that way. And also, we've noticed over the years how many researchers have changed their tune, and how we think that when many people realized that they couldn't identify all the formations or say certain formations as being man-made, when they became confused by the origin of a formation, and then they found that it was well-made, but it was very likely man-made, or it was man-made, then that threw doubt on much more. And because right from the beginning, we placed a lot of importance on trying to identify the authenticity, the origin. And if we couldn't tell, we put it in an unknown box for later on for more investigation. But each year, from 1980 to 2001, there were formations that, with their evidence, clearly indicated that they were non-man-made, and there were many, many formations where their physical evidence clearly indicated and other things indicated that they were man-made. Now, we noticed after a while that many researchers started to say in the end that, well, it doesn't matter whether they're man-made or not. It's all art. It's all magical. It all affects you. Well, we have to really strongly disagree with that, because it really does matter whether they're non-man-made or not, because if you have a non-human intelligence communicating in the most incredible ways that we have witnessed in the fields for many years, in formations that teach you things that have so much to convey and are on a level way above any attempts of any human-made formations, it's almost an insult, irrespective of whether you think that it's extraterrestrially made or it's made by a supernatural source of intelligence, to lower that down to, oh, it's not important, it's no more important than a man-made formation, is just ridiculous. But at the same token, that's not to discard that in man-made formations, if you bring human beings to the site, you're bringing the energy of their consciousness. If you bring the energy of consciousness, you're bringing the energy of people's emotions, their expectations, their thoughts. And that energy can co-manifest parapsychological phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
So you can even have events occurring in proximity to man-made formations. But that's because you're bringing human consciousness there.
Okay, let's go to Jesse in California. You're on with Ed and Chris Sherwood. Hey, Jesse.
Hello. I'm going to make this short because it's a lot of information. It said that the New World Order is planning to use a fake alien invasion to bring about their global government. S.D. Rockefeller, Supreme David Rockefeller, is 34 years old, and he's most well known for his work in artificial intelligence and global currency. And he set up the special drawing rights and also the Asian currency unit and the Allied unit. He believes himself to be the redeemed Lucifer of the Urantia book. Mm-hmm. And he claims that instead of destroying the Earth, he's going to save mankind by creating this global government, and that there's a race of aliens coming that is unpleased with the evolution of mankind. They're going to destroy humanity, but through creating a one-world government with a one dictator, he can clean up humanity and society and save mankind from their destruction of this other race. I wanted to know if you've heard of Supreme David Rockefeller, and if that sounds like what the message was saying in the crop circle that appeared outside of the radio telescope, the one about the Great Deception.
Yes, that to us was another clear man-made formation. So to us, the message of whatever was attempted to be put in there was man-made and just not important. I have heard of the little bit of the one world order type thing you mentioned. In fact, I heard that more than 15 years ago from people, certain people saying the same thing. And I feel like, you know, there's many things happening in the world that we're all not aware of going on all the time. And maybe some of this is happening. But there's also a lot of fear in the world of things happening, a lot of imagined things happening. And I don't feel at all that we are in any imminent danger or threat to be invaded by any alien civilizations. There's more than one out there, and there also include civilizations out there that are equally, if not more so, technological than any species coming here with malintent or, let's say, not so compassionate feelings towards humanity. And they surely would not allow the Genesis Project of this planet to be just drastically changed by their interference. However, though, I do feel, again, from while I speak mostly from my own experience, that though there may be civilizations, evolved beings that have been here for a long time, in a way, keeping the nursery, humanity and planet Earth, the Genesis Project, going, and tweaking here and there, interacting here and there, almost like occasional gardeners. Despite that, there are some that get through from time to time, perhaps to awaken humanity to the fact that the universe is somewhat like the Earth, and they're all different levels of, they're beings on different levels of self-knowledge and development, and we need to choose who we want to interact with. And if we have not so clear intentions ourselves, or we have negative intentions ourselves, then if we interact with any kind, we will most likely be attracting those like ourselves. So if we want to eventually have contact, communication, interaction with benevolent extraterrestrial civilizations, then we need to adopt things, do things, which would attract that type of intelligence. And I think, you know, a question I was asked, I've been asked through the years occasionally, is how can you tell the difference between a civilization that comes with love and one that comes to control or dominate?
And that should be easy, though.
Right, exactly. Those that come to control, even if they mask it, hide it, dress it up as something else, eventually they will show it. And that's when you'll know that you are with the wrong kind. So before that point, it's important to question all the time the experience that you're having. And to remember, too, which I feel is very important, is that we're all cosmic beings. Even if you're a human being in this lifetime and you're at the mercy of a gray that intrudes in your life and takes control and does some things, you are a cosmic being. You're a particle of the great creation, and you have rights, and you can assert them psychically.
Okay, let's go now to some more final callers. We'll go to Maggie in Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Maggie. Go ahead.
Hi. Are they located under aquifers, and do you think that they're trying to teach us to communicate more collectively and telepathically?
Who do you mean by they? You mean
the crops, the manifestation of the crops?
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, yes, there has been the aquifer connection has been studied, and we definitely believe that there is a connection between underground water and the ability for the planetary forces that are involved in the creation of and manifestation of these phenomena. Water is an essential
element.
Element, yes.
In the physics of the process.
Yeah, and that study has been done, begun years ago. I'm sorry, I don't remember the second part of your question.
The second part is, might they be trying to teach us to communicate more collectively and telepathically?
That's certainly something that can be learned.
Yes.
We feel from this, when you recognize that it is, in a way, a collective consciousness phenomena.
I mean, yes.
It's not simply that we're creating it from our consciousness. We're not willing this to occur, but it is like, a global poltergeist that is being manifested partly by the energy of our collective mind, our energy of our deep concerns, the things we need to bring into our conscious mind. I feel that life gives us lots of signs, indications about our lives, whether we're living them correctly or not. You know, our bodies tells us things, our environment tells us things, if you're sensitive to signs and that. Most of the way the collective universe, infinite mind universe, communicates to each of us individually is through natural signs. However, there are times when natural is not enough. The being doesn't get it. And it seems that that's when you need to have it given to you supernaturally or parapsychologically in the form of phenomena. And poltergeist phenomena, ordinary poltergeist phenomena, for example, is very expressive of underlying emotional issues that usually an individual needs to resolve. Well, imagine that being a collective situation, i.e. a planet with 6 billion people who in their deep unconscious mind or even subconscious mind or conscious mind, but collectively, are concerned about what we're doing to the planet. How long can we carry on this way? Is it going to get worse?
Consciousness raising is part of the purpose and the message of that process.
Very much.
Any tie-ins to 2012 with any of this that you're working on?
Well, we don't know for sure if any major thing will happen on 2012, although a lot of people suspect so the energy of that expectation might do something.
Yeah, definitely.
But we do feel, though, that the world's different prophecies have all been accurate. And though what they are pointing to might still yet be fully unknown. So 2012, it's the prophecy of the Maya, and they got one prophecy bang on July 11th, 1991, when they said that when the sixth sun... when the total solar eclipse occurs, which did in July 11th, 91, the beings that came from the stars that taught them civilization hundreds of years ago would return, and they did. As a total solar eclipse occurred over Mexico City and Mexico, UFOs appeared over Mexico City and other cities simultaneously during the eclipse. fulfilling that prophecy. In fact, it's the only prophecy I know in the world, the Mayan prophecy, where it speaks of the return of the beings from the stars and gives a date and a time. And it was fulfilled. It wasn't fulfilled like an Independence Day with great big motherships and scaring everyone to death. It was small objects just parked themselves over dense populated areas, cities, for a period of time, and then they left. And I feel that down the road, this is probably, I think, something that we're going to experience on a global scale.
It's
something
it's continued in Mexico since then, I might add.
That's right. And exponentially.
Yes.
But globally, I feel like, just like the being asked me when I was 9 years old, do you remember? I feel that in many ways, a lot of the UFO sightings worldwide are asking us collectively, do you remember? Do you remember you're not alone? Do you remember you live many lives? This is your current human life. But your soul is on a journey towards returning to its source, and you will live many lives, and maybe even extraterrestrial ones. And this is all part of waking us up.
I think so. We might have time for one more quick call, just about a minute left. Let's go to Bill in Alaska. Bill, real quickly, go ahead.
Hello, George, and your guests, Ed and Chris. I'm in
Hi, Bill.
Alaska, sitting here off trailing. I've seen a lot of anomalies here, explosions in the sky, et cetera. What I was wondering most definitely is, are these aliens, you guys see, elongated due to the lack of gravity? And also, are there UFO crafts that you can only see with, through your camera? Is that because they're inflatable and deflatable?
So what was the second thing you said again?
These anomalies that you only see through the camera?
Yeah.
Are they? Is that because, I mean, you know...
No, that's because they
just
are,
a minute left. Go ahead.
They're oscillating at a frequency that the human eye, in an ordinary state of consciousness, can't see. But if you alter your consciousness, you'll find that you can see through your eyes and see things in infrared. You know, science will say you can't see infrared, can't see ultraviolet. Well, that's not true.
And it's photographable, too. You can photograph
yes,
into infrared.
You can photograph
see
it.
What Ed can see and others can't.
Right. And if the first part of what you said...
Well, we won't have time for that anyway, Ed.
Oh,
I want to thank both of you for being on the program. Give us your websites, would you?
Thank you, George, for having us.
Thank you so much. Our website is cropcircleanswers.com, and our YouTube, expanding YouTube presence, which we intend to post a lot more videos, so do please watch that space, is youtube.com/circlescribe. One word.
Good to have both of you back again on Coast to Coast. Ed and Chris Sherwood. For Jason Bowers, Dan Galante, Jason King, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.